This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number three of Sharp Money here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Adam Burke on the desk, pinch hitting for the guys who are taking some time off. Wyatt Tomchek on the ones and twos over here. We were talking some Survivor talk. Before we get to that, we had a declaration from one Adam Burke over here where it slipped out that I am in a couple of weeks, I'm heading up to Wisconsin. I know it's a year of the golf trip for me, but I'm heading up to Wisconsin to do all of those golf courses up there. And you gave me a beer to try out.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'll try it for you. I'm not a big beer drinker, but yeah, you know, whatever. I'll give it a whirl. Let you know what I think of it. And then Adam, right before you come in here, goes, most overrated beer there is. It was what's the beer?
It's called Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow.
Only sold in Wisconsin.
Only sold in Wisconsin. So you've had it in Wisconsin then? And no good.
I mean, it's...
This is why we don't like Ohio people.
It's fine. Wisconsin is nothing against Ohio, to my knowledge.
I know, but we also
there's a lot of good breweries in Milwaukee. Broken Bat Brewing Company is a really good spot. Shout out to them. Spotted Cow is overrated. And also, Leinenkugel's is terrible.
I haven't had that one, but Spotted Cow...
You've never had a Leinenkugel, like a summer shandy?
Oh, okay, yes, then I've had that.
Yeah. Leinenkugel's is not good.
It's okay. Spotted Cow's the one I go for.
He's only been drinking for about 18 months. That's so true.
Has Greg Peterson rated Spotted Cow?
Yes, I asked him that like maybe a month ago because I was going to Wisconsin to visit my family earlier this month, and he said that one was a very high-rated beer.
What is – so if you were – since we're talking about it, like if you were going to tell people, hey, man – Adam, what's two beers I should go try? I mean, like what are two beers people should go try?
I mean, I've checked in like close to 2,000 on my Untappd app. So
really, wow.
Two beers that I like in Wisconsin or just generally?
No, just
speaking?
In general. If people are just kind of like, hey man, then like what is you're on death row? Like, hey, how about this? We're sending you out to Death Valley. Like we're sending you out to Death Valley. We don't know if you're coming back. It's 130 degrees. We have no idea whether you're coming back. You can bring two beers with you. What are those two beers?
If I can bring two beers with me?
Yeah.
All right, so there's a brewery in Ohio, in Sandusky, Ohio, called Clag. Stands for Cocky Little Asian Guy.
Oh.
Kaz, the owner, his beer is incredible. He has this Mama Bui IPA that's really, really good. He's got that. And then also, I'll give one that's more widely available. So from Russian River Brewing Company in California, Pliny the Elder is the best widely available double IPA. I guess it's not widely available, but they're distributing in Nevada now. Okay. If they distribute in Nevada, it's pretty widely available. Yeah. So Pliny the Elder is extremely good.
There we go. See, there's your two recommendations.
I have an update from our great producer, Caesar, who's producing VSiN Primetime. He said Spotted Cow was 10 out of 10 on Greg's review.
I'm not surprised.
I don't think there was any bias.
Greg is a Wisconsin guy, though, right?
Yes. I think he's from...
There's bias, then.
Then there's bias.
I think he's from the Green Bay area, Appleton, if I'm not mistaken.
Appleton, north of the lake up there, right?
Anytime I go out of town, we go to breweries. Like, we kind of make either half a day or something like that, and we go to breweries wherever we are. So, I mean, I've been to a lot of different breweries.
Have you been to Abita Brewery in Abita Springs, Louisiana?
No. You know what? We were going to go on the second day that I was in New Orleans, but we wound up going somewhere else. But I did go to a couple of pretty good breweries down there.
The cool thing about if you're ever in the area and you want to take a little detour from New Orleans and go to Abita Springs, they'll start you out at the tour and they will be like, all right, here we go. We're going to do the tour. And for those of you that don't care at all about the tour, you can just go right over there and there's the tasting room. And like, that's how they start the whole thing out or whatever. And then like half the people just leave and just go into the tasting room and have no interest whatsoever in the tour at all.
I mean, the tours are cool. We've toured a few distilleries too on the Bourbon Trail, along with Jack Daniel's distillery, which isn't really on the Bourbon Trail. And it's not a bourbon anyway. But, yeah, I mean, all those things are really cool to go and do. And then, of course, you know, you get a sample. Rheingeist in Cincinnati, Ohio, was really good about that. Where, like, actually one of the owner's fathers gave us the tour. He's like, oh, yeah, my son works here. So I was talking to him afterwards. I was like, oh, what does your son do here? He goes, well, he owns it. I was like, yeah, he just works here. Sure.
There you go. I've done a bunch of the vineyards. I haven't done a ton of breweries, but maybe that's something I can start working in. All right, so Survivor Talk, we said there's a bunch of different contests out there. So this isn't kind of one size fits all, right? So you need to go in and you need to make sure that you know the rules to your Survivor contest. Is there extra weeks like Adam mentioned? Is it, you know, some of them allow you to lose once and you can get back in, right? Like there are some that allow you to rebuy. There are some that if you lose in the first 5 weeks or something, whatever it might be. So just make sure you know the rules of your contest as well. We talked about picking on a couple of teams. Patriots were one of them. Titans were another one. I think the Panthers have a chance to be better, Adam, but certainly when I say better, that doesn't mean they're going to be good, right? I mean, like, better is just better. That doesn't mean that they're going to be good. And I'm not 100% on the train that Bryce Young was a bust. I think he's put in a really tough situation last year. When your number one wide receiver is Adam Thielen, like, I don't know exactly what you really expected out of him in a horrible offensive line. So maybe they can be a little bit better.
I mean, better is 3-14.
I was going to say, but so, a little bit better doesn't mean very many wins. So right. Obviously a team that you can go target as well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think right out of the gate, New England is a team that you want to go against because, you know, I mean, there's great incentive for Cincinnati in week one to look good, right? I mean, We've talked about this already. They have an easy part of the schedule kind of to start the year. This is a win that they need to get, and they're the biggest favorite on the board against the Patriots here in terms of the look-ahead numbers. And for me, like, unless you get a situation with Joe Burrow like you got last year where he hurt his calf in training camp and he was very compromised, like, with an injury-prone player, I like to think that this is the healthiest he's probably going to be throughout the course of the season, coming off of the wrist and all that. Again, I hope he plays a little bit in the preseason for us to see that. But, like, I go through week by week in the article, and not only look at the team that I would use, but also look at the considerations and kind of explain why I wouldn't take that team now as opposed to somebody else, because maybe there's a better chance to take them. Look, Cincinnati is supposed to be favored in 13 or 14 of their 17 games. Maybe there is a better spot to take them than New England right away. Mm-hmm. But, like, to me, I don't want to lose in week one.
Yeah.
Right? If I take a chance down the line, something like that, that's fine. I don't want to lose in week one. Now, there is the rebuy option, but I also don't really want to do that. So I got to make sure I get the week one pick right, because, you know, we know everything about everybody in week one. So we know who's healthy and who's not. So for me, I would just take the Bengals right away and then move it on down the line.
I'm with you on that, too, because, listen, I've, again, trademark division of death. Like, they are – that division could beat up on a bunch of the teams in that division, right? And like, when I say beat up, I'm not talking about, like, even wins and losses. I'm talking about, like, actually beat them up. Like, those are going to be grinds of games, like, several times throughout the course of the year. Like I said, week one, you're getting the freshest, best version of Cincinnati. We understand, guys, this is training camp, things will happen, and we can amend what we're talking about. But, like, in theory, we're getting the best, freshest version of this team that we're going to get. And so I like going ahead and getting that win and moving on as well. That obviously is the strategy of picking on the Patriots as well. As week two, you start to look at these big favorites. Ravens are huge favorites over the Raiders. Jets, huge favorite over the Patriots in week three. Kind of heading back to what we were saying, some of the Raiders, you know, Raiders 6.5 win total, not expected to win very many games. Patriots, lowest win total there is on the board. So, again, we're going back and kind of picking on those teams.
Right, and as I was looking here, I mean, I'm going against the Patriots 4 times in the first 7 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, in the article. And, again, this is just a blueprint. This is just kind of plotting it out. The other thing you have to keep in mind is if you're going to make a deep run in this thing, you want to have good teams left, right? So it is difficult, say, in the first 3 or 4 weeks to take the Bengals, the Ravens, the Jets, the 49ers all off the board because those are all, you know, presumably good teams, right? And if you get late in the contest and all of a sudden, you know, you're in week 14 and all you have are like 500 teams left, that's a little bit difficult. So you do want to try to balance out, you know, when you are taking these teams. But also you can do that by looking at what's going on that week. You know, are there opportunities where maybe I can take – a lesser team is a, you know, 4.5, 5-point favorite to win outright, as opposed to a better team is a 7, 7.5, 8-point favorite to win outright because I can use them later in a tougher week, something like that. So, you know, I think that there are enough good teams and good situations that you can, you know, kind of take some good teams early, try to save some good teams, kind of balance them out throughout the course of the year. Also, I mean, you have your priors coming into the season, right?
Yeah.
You may have a season win total over bet that you like that team is – -2.5, -3 in the look-ahead market, but by game week, they might be 6.5, 7-point favorites because their body of work kind of, you know, supports such an adjustment in their numbers. So I kind of did that a little bit too with the forecasting in the article because, again, I mean, things will change based on injury, but things will also change based on if a team looks good or looks bad.
Yeah, so the other thing too is, Adam, the thing that really can turn these contests on their head too and change your strategy, and same mainly for the better, is quarterback injuries, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, those are the teams, too, we want to go in and be able to adjust on the fly and attack those teams too, because you know if a quarterback's only going to miss 2 or 3 weeks, you need to strike while that team is playing with their backup, right? And so it might get you off of what you originally thought you were going to do, but you understand the opportunities is very small, and you have to take advantage of it in those couple of weeks in which you're able to attack. Maybe even a good team, right? I mean, maybe it's the Ravens who have to go to a backup, and now you're like, oh, well, this team is much worse without Lamar Jackson, something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's an important thing to mention, too, is that, you know, whatever the good team is, quote unquote, if good team loses a good player, they're not as good of a team anymore. So, like, you probably went into last season thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to take the Jets in this spot, and then Aaron Rodgers plays, like, 6 minutes of the regular season, and when can you take the Jets after that point? You can't.
Yeah.
So there is also some equity in when a good team is healthy, you go ahead and fire away. Because, again, quarterback injuries are going to be such a big thing. So, like, maybe I take the Jets early. Like, I have the Jets in week 3 over the Patriots, which makes a ton of sense. Does 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers make it through the season? Well, if he's there in week 3, I might as well take him now and go ahead and bank that one.
And looking at your blueprint here, and there are some teams we're using early, but let's even get to the back half here, starting in week 11. You still have the Eagles, Dolphins, Cowboys, Bills, Rams, and Falcons all still available, right? And those are all teams I think are going to be good this year. And
right.
So while you're firing early on some of these teams, there's still plenty left.
And I got to the end, and I never even used Detroit. And I like Jared Goff to win the MVP.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're going to be really good.
Yeah. So, again, a team that you could sub in somewhere along the way if that were to be the case. But, again, it's a fun article, fun discussion for us to have as we continue on. Coming back here on Sharp Money.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, we got a deal for you. It's 13 months for the price of 12. VSiN Pro, $199 for 13 months instead of 12. VSiN.com/subscribe using the promo code Sharp, SHARP. And yes, you can go in and get everything we do over at VSiN.com, including a video feed of this very here show. You'll be able to see what me and Adam look like if you had a VSiN Pro subscription. What do you think about that?
What does the VSiN Plus Plus subscription get you?
People can see what Wyatt looks like if they have a VSiN Pro subscription. You get 13 months of it for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code SHARP. SHARP. Matt Brown and Adam in here for the guys. And
I give you credit for not using the promo code handle because we're on Sharp Money.
We are.
But the handle is your show.
It
on
is.
Weekends.
It's also kind of the same colors, too.
Is it? Yeah. I don't know.
Like more yellowish type, right?
You know what? Don't know.
Okay.
Don't know what the color scheme is. I didn't even know there was a color scheme. Is there a color scheme?
Yeah, each show's got a different thing that's Greg Peterson experiences since we were talking about Greg. It's like light blue, sky blue.
Oh. They didn't consult me on the color scheme, so I don't know.
Did you want to be consulted on the color scheme?
I mean, you know what? Being able to give your opinion never hurts, right? You know what I'm saying?
With your house, were you consulted
on the
color
scheme? It's one of those things, too, like something like this, where it's like they say something to you about a color scheme, and you're like, what are they even asking me about this for? And then you look, and you go like, well, I don't really like that. And then you like give your opinion anyway. You know, you're kind of like, why are they even asking me I don't like that color yellow. Like, or whatever, you know, so you think that you don't have an opinion on it, but you really do. You're kind of like, I don't need to be no one needs to consult me about that except, you know, I mean, maybe not that color
like the
red.
Age-old conversation of, hey, where do you want to eat? I don't care. You pick. I don't really like that.
Yeah, I'm not really in the mood for that. And it's like, well, then why? Exactly.
It's like we're eating ramen tonight.
Yeah, it's one of those deals. So, I'll find out what our color scheme is. I will. I'll figure it out.
I haven't eaten ramen since college, and I intend to keep that streak going.
You know, there are like
at least
ramen,
not like bad ramen.
You know, there are ramen places?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Like,
Never really been. That's
so they're charging me, what, $12 for something that I used to pay 12 cents for whenever I was like a quarter? They used to be four for
better.
A dollar. Like, there was like, you would get four of the packages for a dollar.
Well, I mean, they're not putting like top ramen in front of you at a ramen restaurant.
I mean, I don't know why not. It's tasty. It's tasty as hell.
By the way, I just shot down our chances they were going to top ramen sponsorship.
Yeah, I don't know why you did that, but I mean, not for me. I just said top ramen's tasty as hell, man. That was good. It got me through a lot in college. You know, I didn't want to cook. I didn't really want to cook stuff in college. Did you cook?
No.
Yeah.
No.
It was spaghetti, ramen, and then every now and then maybe like a grilled cheese sandwich.
I mean, you can always find like a $5 pizza around a college.
Yeah, Little Caesars.
Well, I mean.
Well, we had Hungry Howie's at the University of Akron.
Okay.
And Europe Gyro. Europe Gyro's pizza was really good.
Now, try going to college in Vegas where everything's just expensive.
I guess it's supposed to be Europe Hero, right? Not Gyro.
Yeah.
Hero.
Yeah. What do you? So you.
I also lived at home, too, so.
You lived at home in college?
Yeah.
Was Chaba Hut wasn't over there by UNLV when you were
so
school,
quite the
right?
ladies man you were in college then.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, yeah. You're like, you go out to a bar and you're kind of like, no, we got to go to your place. And she's like, no, I want to go to your place. And she's like, no, we got to your place. And she's like, I've got three roommates. And you're like, I have two and they're my parents. So like, let's go to yours. It's fine.
Also live 30 minutes out, so that eliminated that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Man, some people like look back on the year like, yeah, it's right after I got out of college is when things got good. Is that when that happened for you? Not in college, right?
Yeah, I mean, I moved out when I was 25, so I waited a little bit. I milked it as much as I possibly could.
I mean, it is expensive here. I'll admit.
Yeah.
It is expensive. Statute of limitations. Like, one of my buddies worked at one of the pizza places, one of the local pizza places in Baton Rouge. And so, let's just say we had discounted pizzas from time to time. Show up at the apartment. You know, I mean, again, statute of limitations is over. He can't get in
right,
trouble
yeah.
for all
yeah.
that.
Is the pizza place still in business?
They are still in business. One of the chicken finger places that one of my other buddies worked at is not in.
Was it good or free?
Ooh, that's a good question.
What's that?
The pizza.
Well, what do they say? Like pizza and the other thing that's pleasurable. It's still. Yeah, I mean, it's no matter what. Even if it's bad, it's still good. You know, even if it's bad, it's still good. So we had that chicken finger place. On the other hand, is not in business anymore, and I'm sure we had something to do with that. Raisin Cane's, the very first one, was in Baton Rouge, by the way. It was founded in Baton Rouge. When I was in college, there was one Raisin Cane's, and it was on the campus at LSU.
I'm not going to say it. I don't want to offend Wyatt. I'm not going to say it.
Well, you might offend Matt
here. You don't like Raisin Cane's either?
I think it's fine. Also, I think crinkle-cut fries are the biggest waste of time in the world.
Well, fries are just like the side. You know, the main thing with Raisin Cane's, the chicken, Texas toast, and the sauce.
Yeah.
The only thing that saves Raisin Cane's is the cane sauce.
Yeah, and the bread.
The bread is good.
Bread is good.
We would leave the bar, and we would just go buy like 30 pieces of bread and 10 sauces, and then that's all we ate. Like, we didn't even get the chicken and all the other stuff. We were just like, yeah, we'd like 30 breads and 10 sauces, please. And they'd be like, are you serious? I'm like, very serious. Nice. Incredibly serious.
Speaking of Wisconsin, they're supposed to be getting their first Raising Cane's here soon.
It's a big deal.
Vegas is finally getting Bojangles whenever it actually gets done.
It is world. It's like worldwide now. The guys pitched it in his grad school class, and the teacher was kind of like, "You're only going to sell chicken fingers? Like, no one's just like no, whatever." And then some other guy in the class was like, "I think it's a pretty good idea." And then they kind of like started talking about it. Next thing you know, boom, chicken finger. Now it's worldwide. The guy's like almost a billionaire with a B.
Like, good
now,
for him.
Teacher looks stupid now.
Yeah, for slinging chicken fingers.
I think it's fine. It's not the kind of place I'm going to wait like a half hour in the drive-thru for.
I don't know if I've ever done the drive-thru for Raising Cane's.
I would never wait in line for anything anyway.
Like in
for
and out.
Food. Yeah,
I'm just going to go straight in. I'm not going to wait 30 minutes in the drive-thru.
I got to say, so the in and out in the Link Promenade down on the Strip is fantastic. Every other in and out I've had around the Valley, just not as good.
Interesting.
Just service or just overall food?
I didn't know that was the thing.
Both.
Okay.
So we were talking Major League Baseball futures earlier, and we got off topic, and you said, hey, there is one that I actually like and one that people can go and put in their account at a big number right now. I don't think the Cy Young race is close to being over at all in either league. Like, I think it is still wide open in both leagues. I don't care that Scooble's plus 170. Burns obviously is awesome with a proven track record, but plus 250, too short for him. I think there is a lot of people over in the American League that can still win this thing, and you like one that is a nice fat number that if he plays his way into the conversation, you should be able to monetize the ticket no matter what.
Yeah, so I think Tanner Bibee at 40-1 for Cleveland is worth it. I realize, full disclosure, I am a Guardians fan, but also that means I watch this team very, very closely. Recently, they changed Tanner Bibee's pitch mix a little bit, and he's been generating a lot more strikeouts as a result. You look at him in the month of June, 40 strikeouts and 28 and a third, 286 ERA, his best month statistically by a pretty large margin. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that they changed his pitch mix quite significantly. And that's a really important thing, because what they did in changing his pitch mix was generate more swing and miss. And that's what you need. You need to start racking up strikeouts at this time of the year, if you want to be part of that Cy Young conversation, Cleveland is one of the best teams in the American League from a record standpoint. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable. But when you look at Bibee and you look at the rest of this rotation, the rest of the rotation is terrible. So this is one of those things that will kind of stand out a little bit. We kind of talked about the MVP market earlier where, like, Josh Naylor is not really hitting, Stephen Kwan is, but most guys in the Guardians lineup aren't. Jose Ramirez should be getting more love than he is in the MVP market for what he means to that team. It is very, very well known that Cleveland's rotation is not good. But if Bibee can shine the rest of the way, and I think that he can, and I think he's okay with the workload going forward because of the way that Cleveland has developed him, I think at 40-1, he can be a guy who maybe in August you're talking about him being 10-1, 12-1, something like that, maybe even moving down more.
And the thing I like about Bibee, too, is like it's almost the same bet that we're talking about with Ramirez. Like, he struggled at the beginning of the year, and that's why the overall stats right now aren't just blowing you away, popping off of the page, but they're still good. I mean, it was just, but it's like he's not one of these dudes that still has the sub 2 ERA or whatever or something like that, because there was a few bad starts there at the beginning of the year. But you look, the stuff you would love to see with the pitcher, Bibee's sitting there, increased his K rate up to 29% so far this year, decreased his walk rate down to 5.8% so far, increased the swinging strikes up to 12.7% from 11.1 last year. So everything across the board looks like he's just doing better, right?
Right.
And so you would like to believe that that is kind of the trend that we're seeing with Bibee as we move forward.
Well, and look, I mean, Tarek Skubal is very deserving of being the favorite. No doubt about that. Tarek Skubal's also never thrown over 150 innings in his career. So, like, that's a guy that you have major injury risk with. Corbin Burns, I get it. But, like, Garrett Crochet, he may be traded to the National League. I mean, the White Sox should trade Crochet and maybe Luis Robert.
I was going to say, they need to, like, break it down. Yeah,
right.
That team is horrible.
Jack Flaherty's going to get traded. If he stays in the AL, then he's still in the mix for this. But if he goes to the NL, then he's obviously not. Seth Lugo just doesn't – he's not a strikeout type of guy. Tanner Houck's starting to kind of fade a little bit. Cole Reagan's – he's been knocked around a little bit.
It looks like
too.
He might be starting to, I'm not going to say run out of gas, but like maybe, I will say this though, maybe get figured out a little bit.
Right, yeah. And that's also another one where he's a guy who hasn't really had that type of workload before. So I think there's a case for Bibee to be moving up this board, especially if Cleveland continues to play well. And also, he's got a really good defensive team behind him and the best bullpen in baseball that's going to protect some of those wins and those kinds of things.
And like we're saying, he doesn't have to win this at 40-1. He doesn't have to win this. He needs to just get heads up with Skubal or get heads up with Burns or something like that. And at that point, you can make money off of that ticket. So that's kind of what we're looking for here in all this. We'll go a little bit further into today's card in Major League Baseball. And, of course, we still want to get into that last winless team market over in the NFL.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, we're going to tell you one more time that we have a website that you can go to. VSIN.com, VSIN.com. We have all the best bets over there, which is a page we know you love. Betting splits page is just, it fails sometimes. People hit it so much. Adam, they love the betting splits page. I know it's one of your favorite pages.
Updates every 5 minutes.
It is with DraftKings Odds. Exclusive articles over there. You get your odds by your state. So you go in, plug in your state, and it'll show you all the books available to you and where those odds look like. You got the tools and the guides. And, of course, you can get the video feed as well over at VSiN.com. You can also get the audio feed if you're not into seeing what we look like. On your mobile phone, it is optimized now. You no longer need an app. Just go on VSIN. com. Matt Brown, Adam Burke here on the desk. Just looking at some headlines from since we've been on air. Utah State informs football coach of intent to fire him. So we're going to intend to fire you. You're not quite fired, but we intend to fire you.
Yeah, it's kind of a protection thing. I guess Blake Anderson has 14 days, this is based on his contract, to respond to the reason why Utah State has intent to fire him.
Yes,
which is, I guess, there were three players that were arrested for assault allegations last year.
Yes.
And seems like the school self-investigated but didn't report based on kind of what I was reading this morning. They kind of left with no choice.
Yeah, the actual policy says that schools are required full and timely reporting of disclosures of sexual misconduct, including domestic violence. And The Utah State investigation said the actions taken in spring 23 violated both his employment agreement and university policy, which prohibits employees from investigating disclosure from stopping investigation disclosure of sexual misconduct. So Utah State intends to fire Blake Anderson. And as you said, he has 14 days to say, no, I didn't know anything about anything. Right. That's what he's going to say, because that's what everyone says.
I think I asked you this before the show. Do you think, like, obviously with a coach getting fired or let go, I think players have a free 30 days to enter the portal. Do players enter that late?
I mean, I'd be curious to see what happens, right? I mean, spring practice is already over, but I'm sure there are still, you know, jobs available at some of these programs. So if you want to try to transfer, but also then you run into, like, can you get a scholarship at this point? Like, how many programs have scholarships available and all that? It's going to be an interesting situation for Utah State's players.
You can tell it's the slow season when a headline is that Klay Thompson's dad is disappointed that he chose the Mavericks over the Lakers.
Why is he disappointed? Can you elaborate?
He said he like it? No, he said he gave him advice and then Klay went the other direction. But hey, he's 34 and like 34-year-olds can make their own decision, basically, which is true. But he's disappointed that he chose on. Well, you know what you should not be disappointed at, Dad, is that he's going to save 10% off the top because he's not just paying that straight to California.
Also, I mean, here we are sitting here clicking on this, but I mean, isn't this more like a TMZ type of thing than something that ESPN should be covering?
One of the things that you did bring up that is sports news, just because you're like, oh yeah, I mean, he was good at one point. Kemba Walker going to retire.
Yeah.
No more Kemba Walker. Though I don't know when the last time he actually was good.
I can picture Kemba Walker highlights at UConn. I can't picture a thing he did in the NBA.
Apparently 4-time All-Star, Kemba Walker.
He had a great career with the Hornets. It was really the move when he went to Boston that really kind of spiraled it down downhill.
I mean, hey, he's got a lot of money. He's retiring at 34. I mean, good for him.
Yeah, if we go to Basketball Reference and take a look at
he's the Hornets' all-time franchise leader in points.
Yeah, I mean, you forget. So there's this stretch from the 2015 to 2016 season all the way to the 2019-2020 season. He averaged at least 20 points a game in each one of those seasons. 20.9, 23.2, 22.1, 25.6.
Was he efficient, though? Or was he just taking all of the shots?
You know, I like the fact that I can just do that little click thing. We come in and we see that it's talking about his efficiency. He shot on two-pointers, shot 48%.
The guard, that's good.
You know, not bad.
Yeah.
Over the course of that.
Those were some bad teams, right?
Yeah, three-point, shot 37% from three. So, I mean, you know, pretty good. Pretty good when it's all said and done. But Kemba Walker, no longer going to be out there on the NBA courts.
One of the best crossovers in NCAA basketball history.
The Hornets have one playoff appearance since 2014. That was the 15-16 season. They have one winning season since.
We're kicking things off 6:40 Eastern today. White Sox and Guardians, Red Sox and Marlins, Cardinals and Pirates all going at 6:40 Eastern. Chris Flexen for the White Sox, Carlos Carrasco for the Guardians. And you mentioned nobody else on that staff can pitch. Don't tell that to the odds makers, as the Guardians are -218 home favorites over the White Sox. That is how bad the Sox are.
The White Sox aren't good, and Chris Flexen is a guy who really hasn't been good outside of when he was pitching in Seattle, when he was pitching at T-Mobile Park. When he went out on the road, he was a punching bag. He's just not a very good pitcher. I got to say, Carlos Carrasco he's battling, right? He's just finding ways to stay in games. He's kind of using that veteran know-how. The velocity is gone. The quality of the stuff is not all that spectacular at this point in time. The one thing I will say, though, is, you know, I mean, he's kind of settled in a little bit, and also it cooled off a touch in Cleveland based on where it was during their last homestand. So when it's the summertime there, the ball really carries well, particularly out to right field. The White Sox don't really have a whole lot of left-handed power. Cleveland has actually done pretty well. Top 10 slugging percentage at home this season. So the line is certainly justified, especially with the way that Carrasco has been hanging in there, hanging around.
One of the games that did stand out to me, at least a tad, I want to get your opinion on. So this Cardinals-Pirates game, Kyle Gibson's on the hill for the Cardinals, Mitch Keller for the Pirates. The Cardinals, I understand it's on the road, but they're actually dogs in this game to this Pirates team, and you look and look. I understand Kyle Gibson never lived up to what we thought he was going to be. He was a super hype prospect that never really got it going in the majors, but he's done good enough to stick around for 10 years now at this point, and might be having his best season of his career. A 3.7 ERA that's backed up by like a 4.05 xFIP, which, you know, in today's baseball, I mean, whatever, if you're a 4 ERA guy, you're middle of the rotation guy. I mean, it's not terrible for him. K rate's about the same as we've seen over the last few seasons. Walk rate about the same as we saw last year. I don't know, man. To me, as a dog, I understand it's a slight dog, and I certainly understand that Mitch Keller isn't a complete schlub, but Cardinals are at least somewhat interesting to me at plus money.
Yeah, this is one that I looked at a little bit here, especially because the Cardinals are playing so much better, throughout the last several weeks here. And Pittsburgh is just a team that the offense is remarkably inconsistent and just generally not there. I mean, they'll have some moments where they kind of step up. Seems like they get a little bit of juice in Paul Skene's starts here lately, kind of perform a little bit better. But this is not a particularly good offensive team. And you know what you're going to get out of a guy like Kyle Gibson. You know you're going to get six innings, three earned, something like that, which is a 4.50 ERA, which still isn't very good, but he's going to keep the team in the game. He's going to give them an opportunity, give them a chance. Keller has been pitching a lot better here of late after he got off to a pretty rough start throughout the course of the season. So I can see where the Cardinals look a little bit attractive. It was kind of the starting point for me. I ultimately stayed off of it, but I can't fault you for being interested in St. Louis today.
One of the games that does kind of have, in my opinion, some juice in one of the other markets out there is this Reds and Yankees game. Luis Gil's going to go for the Yankees here as a big minus 218 favorite, Adam. And we kind of look at him, and I'm not going to say he's running out of gas or that he's starting to fade at least a little bit, but I think he is going to be pretty happy for the All-Star break to get here, because as great as he was towards the beginning of the season, a few rough outings here in a row, and you start to wonder, these rookies, rookie of the year market, he is your favorite still, but these rookies, especially pitchers who have never put in this type of workload, who have never been on these strict, every 5 day type thing, if that's starting to mount up to him, seven earned, given up two times out, five earned, given up last time out, only one strikeout two times ago, only two strikeouts this past time out, this could really affect the rookie of the year market to start today.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Luis Gil's a guy, the regression monster was kind of lurking for him anyway. Had a really low batting average on balls in play, really high left on base percentage. He is a guy who does strike out a lot of people, but he'll also issue some walks. And now that the batted ball fortunes have kind of changed for him a little bit, as you mentioned, giving up 12 runs on 12 hits in his last 5 2/3. Also, if you look over his last four starts, 13% barrel rate, 53% hard hit rate. The contact management is starting to wane a little bit, which is typically a sign of command not being where it needs to be. So that's the thing that you're looking at for Heel here. The problem is I have no interest in backing Graham Ashcraft, recently recalled for the Reds. Maybe you look at an over situation, but the Reds' offense is also something that's very unreliable.
You wanna giggle about something? Guess who's making a start today?
Dallas Keuchel.
Dallas Keuchel is starting
For the Brewers, right?
In 2024.
Not only is Dallas Keuchel starting today, he's starting at Coors Field today.
Do you think Dallas Keuchel could break, if he threw a ball at that TV right now, he could break that TV? I mean, I don't even know if he could.
Good question.
I don't even know if he could.
It's a really good question.
Can he break 70? We'll look on the gun today and see if he's able to like get it up, crank it up to about 75 miles an hour as he's out there. We'll take you home here, final segment of Sharp Money when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our NFL betting guide is out now. The first one in the entire world, I promise you. You head on over to VSiN.com/guide, and you're going to get a preview of all 32 teams. Let you know what we think about each one of those. We'll let you know whether we're leaning towards the over or the under on their win total. You can go in and see where every single one of our hosts and analysts thinks we're going to go with the divisions as well. Give you our Super Bowl matchups and also who is going to take that puppy down. Look into the MVP market, look into week one games. We got a little bit of everything over there. Adam Burke and company put together something absolutely beautiful. The first NFL betting guide to hit the market in the entire world, I'm sure of it, VSiN.com/guide. go get it today. I like that neither one of y'all stopped me from saying that it's the first one in the world. I'm just going to roll with that. We should roll with that as a company.
I trust you. We should roll with that.
Yeah, you're the host. This is your show.
We should roll with that as a company. I'm just going to say it's the first NFL betting guide in the world out this year, not ever, but this year, first for 2024 season. We didn't get to all the baseball games. I don't know if any of these other ones catch your eye. There are some like interesting pitchers on the hill today. And when I say interesting, it could be varying, whether good or bad. But Dylan Cease is going for the Padres. We talked about the Padres yesterday as one of those teams where, hey, it's kind of a coin toss, 50-50 on the betting odds, whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. Rangers trying to fight back into that playoff, trying to fight back into that division picture over there in the West. Zach Littell has been terrible for the Rays, but he finds himself just a slight underdog there to the Royals and Brady Singer. We have Grayson Rodriguez and George Kirby, so two young prospects going at it, Orioles and Mariners, and that one's almost a coin flip, 115-105. And then we have the return of Jose Soriano, who was out for several weeks for that Angels team, and not a lot of bright spots for the Angels team other than Soriano, who actually was having a pretty good season, was putting together some stuff over there. But as bad as that Angels team is, only finds himself as a -115 favorite against the A's. I don't know if any of those games caught your eye at all today or not.
All right, so I'm on the Royals. Okay. This is going to take a couple of minutes for me to get through.
Yeah.
But first things first, Zach Littell, who you mentioned for the Rays, he's been awful on the road. 5.13 ERA on the road, 3.38, 3.76, 5.27 slash against. That's batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage. 3.91 weighted on base average against and 33 and a third innings pitch. Zach Littell is a fly ball guy. It's going to be 90 degrees in Kansas City, wind blowing out today. This is a really, really bad matchup for him. However, we need to talk about the Kansas City Royals. We talked about this a little bit in passing on yesterday's show. I tweeted this out before the show. I've been talking to some people in the betting and baseball communities about this. Kansas City Royals, this season, at home, 30-16. On the road, 17-23. If you look at their home offensive splits, they are number one in batting average, fifth in on-base percentage, third in slugging percentage. They have the lowest strikeout percentage at home as an offensive team. They have a 337 weighted on base average. That is second in Major League Baseball. On the road, they're 29th in batting average and on base percentage, 27th in slugging percentage, 27th in weighted on base average. They strike out about 5% more often on the road. At home, 5.2 runs scored per game. On the road, 3.8 runs scored per game. So there are dramatic home road offensive splits for the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr. has huge home road splits. Salvador Perez has some home road splits as well. I don't know what's going on at Kauffman Stadium, but they are a top five offense at home, basically on the level of Baltimore at home, and they hit like the White Sox on the road. That is a dramatic contrast. I don't know what's happening, but I think something's happening at Kauffman Stadium.
Oh.
That said, I'm on the Royals today at home.
When you said, I don't know what's happening, I thought you were wondering about, like, what's going on over at the Sigma Derby machine, on a Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we have, like,
how much,
some intense Sigma Derby action going on.
How much do you think? What's the over-under on what they're winning?
It's
over 100 or under?
It can't be that much because we can see that the jackpot is 4,000 quarters. So, I mean,
right.
The most you could possibly win is $1,000.
And also, you said this yesterday, the favorite's probably winning one of every three races or more.
Yeah. I'm with you there on this Royals team. I think that is a pretty good bet. Listen.
There's something happening.
And Littell's just been horrible, man.
Especially on the road.
Yeah.
But there's something going on here at Kauffman Stadium, and I can't put my finger on it. Look, teams almost always perform better at home offensively than they do on the road, right? Because you tailor your lineup to your home ballpark. Kauffman Stadium is not Coors Field. It's not Fenway Park. It's not one of these ballparks where you have this extreme built-in offensive advantage. It's a pretty neutral ballpark in a lot of ways. So I don't know why this is happening. By the way, Brady Singer has been much better at home than he's been on the road too. But this doesn't appear coincidental to me.
Yeah.
There's something going on here with Kansas City at home. They must have found a way to do something. And I'm not conspiracy theory guy. I'm not up here wearing a tinfoil hat. But to be Baltimore-esque at home and White Sox-esque on the road through the midpoint of the season is strange.
We said Tarek Skubal is your Cy Young favorite. He's on the hill today for the Tigers. They are underdogs, actually, on the road at the Twins. Siemian Woods-Richardson is going for the Twins. They're minus 130 at home. It is plus 110 Tigers on the road. A pretty low 7.5 total here. And you look at Simeon Woods Richardson, and there might be people out there, Adam, who've never even heard of the guy. But he's got a 3.41 ERA that's backed up by a 4.14 xERA, so not that far off. It's kind of almost a little – it's a little bit of what you see is what you get with him. I don't know what voodoo magic he has going on right now. He is an extreme fly ball pitcher that the ball just never leaves the yard. He has an incredibly low home run to fly ball ratio. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys, like 7.6 K per nine. It was one of the lowest on this slate today. He's just getting it done with, and it's not even like he has a high left on base percentage comparatively to like everybody else that's out there. So he's doing something, and that's not to say that the regression monster is certainly coming from, as we mentioned. I mean, it's not that far off his, it is a little bit higher on his advanced stats to what his surface stats say. But the reason they are a favorite here and as big a favorite as they are over Tarik Skubal is because for whatever it is, Woods Richardson's figuring something out, figuring out how to get guys out.
Yeah, and the Twins are playing better here too. I mean, they've, you know, they didn't play well at all at the outset of the season. They're definitely playing better right now. Also, this is a Twins team that ranks second in Major League Baseball and weighted on base average against left-handed pitching. So they've done a very, very good job against southpaws throughout the course of the year. Skubal, of course, is a left-handed guy. The thing about Woods Richardson, too, that's interesting to me is generally when you see fly ball guys that don't give up a lot of home runs, they induce a lot of pop-ups. They're kind of pitching above the launch angle, so to speak, and guys are just hitting the bottom of the baseball, popping it straight up. That's not the case for Woods Richardson either. His infield fly ball percentage is just 8.2%. That's not very high for a fly ball guy. What he is doing, though, is he's preventing guys from pulling the baseball. His pull percentage, 38.5%. Typically, a lot of home runs are going to be pulled, right? They're going to be balls that are pulled in the air or on a line. He's forcing guys to hit the ball the opposite field, the big part of the ballpark. That's been a big advantage for him. So you couple that with the fact that the Twins have been so good against lefties, the Tigers' offense really isn't particularly good. That's why you get the Twins as a favorite here, even though Skubal is having a great year and is the Cy Young favorite.
Yeah, and I actually think the Twins are rightfully favored here, probably the side if I was going to be playing this game. Tigers do not don't hit very well.
No, they don't hit well at all. One game I do like here, and I'll mention this because there's been a pitching change in this game, Arizona and the Dodgers. You got Joe Mantiply, who's now going to open in front of Ryan Nelson. Ryan Nelson's been awful. And Dodgers pitcher Bobby Miller has been awful, too. He's missed some time here this season. He's come back. He's made a couple of starts. He's given up a ton of hard contact.
He got shelled in his rehab starts, too.
Yeah, he wasn't good. Yeah. And look, I mean, sometimes you take AAA starts with a bit of a grain of salt because every ballpark in the PCL basically plays like Coors Field. But he wasn't good, didn't have command at the minor league level, hasn't had command at the big league level. I like over 4.5 for the first five in this game, even with Mantiply opening as a lefty trying to get through the top of that order, get through Otani, get through Freeman. Mantiply is still not that great of a pitcher anyway. But also you can look at, you know, team totals for the first five. And this is something I did yesterday with Colorado. That was one that came through. If you want to fade a pitcher, you don't have to necessarily play a first five money line or play both teams on the first five total. You can play these first five team totals. And I think that's a pretty good market to look to attack here, especially at this time of the year.
We teased it several different times, so at least we'll give this a minute before we get out of here talking about those odds for the last winless team. You can find this over at DraftKings. Patriots 6-1, Panthers 7.5-1, Titans 9-1, Vikings 10, Broncos 11, Giants 12, Commanders 13, everybody else 16-1 or longer. I actually think there's value on the Patriots at 6-1. I really do. We rattled this off when we were talking about the Survivor conversation, but I think it is 0-8. I'm fairly confident in 0-8 for them, and then from there, yeah, it gets a little bit kind of more coin flippy, but it's like coin flippy. It's not even like, oh, well, at least they're favored in these next few games. Like, no, it's more coin flippy after that. If you told me that they lost that game at Tennessee and they went to Chicago and lost again, and you and I both like the Rams, and Miami we expect to be good, could they be looking to try to get their first win in week 13 against Indianapolis? I don't think that is the craziest scenario ever. So fewest wins, 6-1. I actually think there's a little bit of value on the Patriots.
Yeah, I think fewest wins. I think last winless team, I think, makes some sense. I mean, the one that's a little bit scary is Seattle in week 2 with Mike McDonald going all the way out to Foxborough. But other than that, I mean, they're a clear dog in every one of those games.
Yeah, it's just to me, I look at this and say, I don't, the talent's not there. They don't want to go with their quarterback. They took number 3 overall. There's so many things pointing in that direction. Thanks to Mike Pritchard, Vic Taper, Ben Rossa for coming in. Ben Wilson on the desk for me tomorrow. Good luck on all your bets here on a Tuesday.